I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, saying, "Come and see."
Noise of Thunder Radio with Christian J. Pinto.
Okay, praise the Lord, you guys, and welcome. I'm Chris Pinto. This is Noise of Thunder Radio. Today on the show, we are going to continue our discussion on socialism, the rise of socialism in America. We're also going to talk about its relationship with Islam, a new article that we've stumbled across online, talked about this all the way back in 2006, and recognized what was happening in Europe even back then, 9 years ago. Or 10 years ago, thereabout. And the establishment. What is the establishment? What are people really referring to when they make reference to the establishment? This year, the election year, it is repeatedly said in the mainstream media that these anti-establishment candidates, in particular Donald Trump and on the other side Bernie Sanders, are both being called anti-establishment. Then there's a debate on whether or not somebody like Ted Cruz is outside the establishment. He's seen as anti-establishment. They've been debating Marco Rubio. Is Marco Rubio an establishment guy, yes or no? But exactly what do we mean by the term the establishment? What is meant by that? Well, I want to go to this article that I stumbled across. This is all the way back in 2006 from a website called The Big Picture by Vic Rubenfeld. And he posted an article back then. His headline was, quote, "How Socialism and Islam Work Together to Destroy Europe." And when I saw the title, "How Socialism and Islam Work Together to Destroy Europe," I saw that title and I thought, that just zeroes in on exactly what is happening in Europe, in Western Europe today, and what is in the process of happening right here in America. And I think many people, whether they're able to define it in this kind of terminology or not, they recognize that we have these subversive powers at work, and they are, just like they're working to destroy Europe, they want to destroy America, and they're using the same means. And the socialists are really operating as the gatekeepers. They creep into the political systems, they get the positions of power, and then they begin to manipulate things and pass these immigration laws and multicultural laws and this kind of thing, insisting that they've got to bring in hundreds of thousands and millions of Muslims in particular into these countries that are historically Christian countries, and then find ways to support them financially by redistributing the wealth of the general population and then using the money to support Islam. Now, I'm reading this article, and in this, according to the account, and the guy who writes the article, he's describing a conversation that he had with a French business owner and the information that's being related to him by this French business owner. And he says to the French business owner, he says, "Why don't you just drive these guys out, kick these guys out of your country? Why are you putting up with them burning 100 cars a day?" And I read that number and I thought, is that an exaggeration? I mean, surely they can't be burning 100 cars a day. I go look it up. The numbers vary, but that's roughly the amount. According to the Gatestone Institute, in 2015 now. First article is back in 2006. This is 2015. The Gatestone Institute says, quote, "An estimated 40,000 cars are burned in France every year, a destruction often attributed to rival Muslim gangs. Every day, more than 80 cars are burned." So they say more than 80 cars in 2015. So somewhere between 80 to 100 cars are burned every day in France by the Muslims, supposedly. I mean, you can go online and read these stories and look at pictures and video footage and so on. They just have Muslim thugs running around there, burning 40,000 cars a year. It's insane that they're allowing this to go on. And why they don't round these guys up and just throw them out of the country, I have no idea. But the answer, the reason that they don't, is the socialist politicians won't let it happen. Because this is just what the socialists want. This is their agitant against these Western countries that are historically Christian countries. And so the Muslims are there as a continual source of agitation and conflict so that they can, one step at a time, implement the principles of Sharia, I believe, and ultimately bring about a totalitarian state, which works for both the Muslims and for the socialists. Then the question becomes, and some have speculated on this. In fact, I was talking to about this some time ago to Brannon House over at Worldview Weekend. And Brannon was talking about, because many people see this pattern happening. And Islam has teamed up with the socialists, but ultimately they're not going to be compatible. So what's going to happen when they both get what they want? It's kind of like when Hitler joined up with the Soviet Union. They worked together to invade Poland initially, but then Hitler stabbed Stalin in the back when he tried to invade Russia. Well, he did invade Russia. He just wasn't a successful invasion. But will something similar happen between the socialists and the Muslims? Because ultimately, they're not compatible. What each group wants is not compatible with the other one. But this whole immigration thing, this the immigration philosophy, is like a reverse colonization scheme. The original colonization scheme, you had Great Britain going out into different parts of the world and taking control of different countries and expanding the British Empire by going into different countries and then setting up the system of government there, setting up churches and missions and this kind of thing, and having a British presence in all of these different countries like India and elsewhere. And this was the British Empire, about which it was said that the sun never set upon the British Empire because they had so much territory. And then, of course, through the 20th century, they had the decolonization movement. We've talked about that before. Now, today, Obama and his whole administration and the entire left philosophy is very anti-colonial. That colonization is somehow or other wrong, it's evil, it's oppressive. And yet I still maintain, I remember hearing a pastor preach years ago on this, talking about British imperialism and how British imperialism was one of the greatest movements that ever existed in the world. And at the time, I found it to be a very stunning statement because, of course, I had been raised up with a completely different worldview or a very different worldview, and I didn't understand what he was talking about. Years later, I would come to agree with him that the British colonization movement and Christian colonization set up all the places in the world that anybody wants to live in today. That's Christian colonization. Most of the countries that people will talk about wanting to go, if they want to go live there, raise a family, pursue a career, go to school, etc., it's usually a country that has a long history of Christianity, somehow or another. But here's what I've come to realize, brethren. Somebody is going to colonize the world. Somebody's going to do it. We've been taught through the schools, by having the Marxists in the education system, they've been telling everybody that Christian colonization is wrong, it's evil, etc. Meanwhile, these same Marxists, these socialists and communists, you've got to be kidding me, they all want to colonize the world. The reason they're brainwashing the Christian countries into thinking that it's bad for Christians to do this is because they want to do it. And that's what they've been doing. They've been trying to spread communism throughout the world and socialism all over the world. And what they basically hoodwinked the Christians into believing is, oh, Christian colonization is evil. Socialist colonization is good. That's what we need, secular, humanist, socialist colonization everywhere. And communism, communism, communism. But Christianity, bad. Don't, whatever you do, you don't want to be an oppressor. That's basically what our people in the West, not just in America, but over in England as well. I remember when I was filming over in England at the British Library, and the guy who was our kind of our tour guide, that's not really the right term. We weren't on a tour, but the guy who was showing us around, very nice guy, and he was from England. And at some point, the idea of the colonization movement came up, and he said, you know, well, interesting, but, you know, we here are actually taught not to talk about or to mention favorably the colonization movement, that all of that's looked down upon at this point. That was the impression that he gave me, and he told me that. And so they have been taught that that the concept of the British Empire and British imperialism, all of this was just horrible. And so they're given that whole, you know, the guilt complex that is sewn into their education system. Meanwhile, the socialists and the communists and the Muslims have no shame and no apology about going into foreign countries and trying to take them over and to colonize them either for Islam or for Karl Marx. They make no apologies about it. And what the immigration movement is, this is like a reverse colonization movement. What they're doing now is they're bringing all of these illegal immigrants, well, illegals here in America, Muslim immigrants throughout Western Europe and into Canada now and Australia, etc. And they are trying to colonize these historically Christian countries with Islam and with all of these alternative views and beliefs, etc., anything but Christianity, which they have to suppress at every turn. You can promote atheism, you can promote homosexuality and transgenderism and Islam, etc., but not Christianity, no matter what. That's what the movement has been engaged in. And I honestly believe that in the Western world, if we don't shake out of it, if we don't take hold really of the education system, if we don't go after the schools and forbid these communists from brainwashing the kids. I was watching the news earlier, and they're talking about how the young people in our colleges are just, I mean, they're mentally incapacitated. They can't properly function. They were telling stories of people who are traditional conservatives going and just giving a speech at a university, and then the students afterwards having to go have a therapy session because they felt violated. They felt like they weren't safe by having a person come there and talk to them about these conservative ideas. And I'm watching this, and they're serious. And I'm thinking, what has happened? This is what they're teaching the kids in our colleges and universities? When I was raised up as a kid, we were taught, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. I remember learning that as a kid. That's what we were taught. Today, children are taught to be excessively sensitive to anything that anybody says to them. And if anything makes them feel sad or unwanted or unaffirmed or whatever, then they have a reason to be upset and, you know, to require some special therapy or counseling session or whatever. The students are talking about having safe zones and this kind of thing. I mean, it's just completely crazy what the socialists have done to our education system. All right, now I said safe zone. They're actually, they call them safe space, a safe space. And it says, a safe space is a place where anyone can relax and be able to fully express without fear of being made to feel uncomfortable, unwelcome, or unsafe on account of biological sex, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender identity or expression, cultural background, religious affiliation, age, or physical or mental, etc. And it just goes on. Basically, where nobody is going to say anything that will make you upset or somehow or other be in disagreement with who you are as a person, I guess. I mean, you got to be kidding me. How are you going to go anywhere? You won't be able to walk outside your house. But while it's wild right now, brethren, it is somewhat amusing. It's amusing to hear these stories, but it's also very troubling. It's also very disturbing. Because remember, the Inquisition operated based on the idea of heresy. And today, I believe, political correctness has replaced the concept of heresy. And of course, anybody who knows this program knows that I trace these things to the Jesuits in Rome, who are the authors of social justice, socialism, and communism. And so it makes all the sense in the world that they would set up a new system for determining what heresy is. Now, if you study the original heresy through the Middle Ages, and what I mean is the heresy of the Inquisition, not necessarily from the Bible. In the Bible, heresy is a doctrinal error that is contrary to the teaching of Scripture. What heresy became under the popes and the Inquisition was anybody who disagreed with the papacy or the Holy See in Rome. You could agree with the Bible, but if the Pope did not agree with the Bible, then you were declared a heretic. And what's happened now is the socialists, they've developed the new heresy, and it's the new system of thought, the orthodoxy, the cultural orthodoxy that you have to agree with, and if you don't, now you're politically incorrect, and you're guilty of violating one of their sacred boundaries. Effectively, it's a modernized version of heresy. All right, let's go to our commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about these issues, and we're going to talk about the recent victory of Donald Trump in South Carolina and why the establishment seems to be so threatened by Trump. But this leads us to understanding what does the term the establishment mean. We'll talk about that when we come back right after this.
Adullam Films presents Dark Clouds Over Elberton, the true story of the Georgia Guidestones, a dynamic new documentary exposing the environmental agenda. In 1980, this granite monument was erected by an anonymous stranger who called himself R.C. Christian. He claimed to represent a small group that wished to usher in the Age of Reason. Sometimes called the American Stonehenge, this strange monument is said to contain the Ten Commandments of the New Age, or the Ten Commandments of the Antichrist. It calls for global government, environmental control, and worst of all, it says to maintain the world population under 500 million people. But who was R.C. Christian, and does his monument have something to do with the climate change agenda of the United Nations today? Find out by ordering Dark Clouds Over Elberton, the true story of the Georgia Guidestones. Available at noiseofthunderradio.com. That's noiseofthunderradio.com.
Adullam Films presents A Lamp in the Dark, the untold history of the Bible. Enter into a world of saints and martyrs battling spies, assassins, and wolves in sheep's clothing. A Lamp in the Dark unfolds the fascinating history, the Bible, and the lives of the saints who fought to preserve it. This exciting look into the times of valiant men of faith, such as John Wycliffe, William Tyndale, and Martin Luther, is a must-see for any follower of Christ. Filled with rich visual graphics and dramatic reenactments, A Lamp in the Dark is an epic documentary, a powerful witnessing tool for church and Bible study groups around the world. Share with your church, your family, and friends the untold history of the Bible today. Now available at noiseofthunderradio.com. That's noiseofthunderradio.com.
If you want to understand the times through the lens of a biblical worldview, get answers to important Bible questions, or be involved in intensive Bible study and research, then check out situationroom.net/join. You can now join for just $7.99 a month and have instant access to the radio and television programs of Brannon Howes, Mike Gendron, Mike Abendroth, Mike Riddle, Justin Peters, John Whitcomb, Jimmy DeYoung, Jesse Johnson, Susan Heck, Chris Pinto, John Leffler, T.A. McMahon, Michael John Beasley, David Farnell, and Tommy Ice. Many of these programs are exclusive to The Situation Room and are produced and or distributed by Worldview Weekend from our radio and television studios in Memphis, Tennessee. Our goal is to help you defend and proclaim a biblical worldview. So why not go to situationroom.net/join right now and look at what is waiting for you as a member. This is broadcast quality, biblically sound, on-demand content for the entire family. Situationroom.net/join. Join now and we'll send you 20 Worldview Weekend DVDs as our way of saying thank you for becoming a member or for renewing your membership. That's $300 in free DVDs shipped to you free of charge when you join at situationroom.net/join.
Noise of Thunder Radio.
Okay, we are back. Praise the Lord, you guys. I'm Chris Pinto. This is Noise of Thunder Radio. Thanks for staying with the show today. We've been talking about the activities of socialism in America and other parts of the world and the use of political correctness as a new form of heresy, which I believe it is. I think that's what they've done. The media now operates as the Grand Inquisitors, and they follow people around and target anybody who says something that is not in keeping with what they think you're supposed to say. And the man who has really smashed through the entire apparatus of political correctness here in the last 6 months, 7 months, however long it's been, is Donald Trump, as he has been running for president, as he's been right now trying to obtain the Republican nomination to become the next president of the United States. And of course, there are people who predict Trump could be the guy. But there's a great article that somebody forwarded to me from a website called the Capitol Hill Outsider. And the article is called Why the GOP Hates Donald Trump. Now, of course, he's running as a Republican. Everybody would expect the Democrats to be against Trump. But why are the Republicans so opposed to Donald Trump? And he's been hit from all sides. You know, I keep looking for an angle whereby Trump might somehow or other be a pawn for somebody somewhere, some hidden power somewhere, because that so often seems to be the case with a political system. Who are they working for? With Obama, it was when he was running for president. We all remember back in 2008, the media were showering all this attention on him. The media, you know, didn't ask him any hard questions. They supported him 100%, with the exception of Fox. Fox was the one news organization that actually confronted Obama. but he got an overwhelming amount of support from the media, overwhelming amount of support from Hollywood and all these different groups, and then he wins the presidency. But with Trump, it's been the exact opposite. Trump has been the leading candidate in either party in terms of the amount of attention, people going to his rallies. I mean, he's getting tens of thousands of people who show up for his rallies. He's gotten the most excitement of any candidate in this whole race, but he's not really being, he's being helped by the media because they focus all of this attention on him, but the media has gone after him. The media has tried to take down Donald Trump a number of times, and every time they try to take him out or run a story on him that they think is going to give a negative opinion to his supporters, the whole thing backfires and he ends up with even more support than before. It's just been hard to figure out if somebody's conspiring in all this. I don't know how they're doing it. And if they are doing it, I have to say it's absolutely brilliant and masterful, whatever they're doing. I mean, this would have to be, who could predict this? How do you plan it? How do you plan to have a guy come out and say all this stuff, and yet he continues to have support? Now, you could fake the polls. You see what I'm saying? You could doctor up the polls. Somebody could do that. I believe that's possible. But you can't fake tens of thousands of people turning out. That you can't imitate. I guess you could hire some to go out there, but Trump has a lot of genuine supporters. He's got millions of people across the country. But why is he getting so much opposition from the establishment? And that seems to have everything to do with his support, of course. This article from the Capitol Hill Outsider, Why the GOP Hates Donald Trump, says this, and I thought this was pretty concise. It says, quote, after the insiders have established the United Socialist States of America, in fact, if not in name, the next step is the great merger of all nations of the world into a dictatorial world government. The insiders' code word for the world superstate is New World Order, a phrase often used by Richard Nixon and Bush Sr., George H.W. Bush. The Council on Foreign Relations states in its study number 7, quote, the U.S. must strive to, A, build a new international order. Goes on to say a world government has always been the object of the communists. And that is from, they cite the source there, none dare call it conspiracy. None dare call it conspiracy, as opposed to the book by John Stormer that we've talked about on the program before, None Dare Call It Treason. But essentially, effectively talking about the same subject matter. The whole concept of the New World Order, it really is a global Marxist society based on the principles of communism. And so this article goes on. It says, quote, just why does the GOP hate Donald Trump? That's easy to answer, because he's thrown a monkey wrench into the plans of the New World Order. Who would have thought that an outsider like billionaire Donald Trump would capture the attention of the American people and at the same time infuriate the GOP, DNC, and MSM, but mostly his own party? To the GOP, Donald Trump is not only a pariah, but a wild card. Americans who are sick and tired of the same old from the Republican Party are thrilled to hear someone speak the same language we speak to each other. Then it goes on from there. And basically, this article says something that I have suspected from shortly after Trump first entered into the race. And that is, you know, when I first saw the news reports on him, I thought they were just going to marginalize him, make fun of him, this kind of thing, and try and get him out pretty quick. But, of course, that didn't happen. He didn't get out. He just got stronger and stronger. And then you've just had all of these attempts to try and derail his campaign. But nothing has worked. And I haven't seen anybody. I haven't seen, because it's not just the Democrats now. This is not Democrats versus Republicans. This is Democrats and Republicans and the media, conservative media, liberal media, all of them in panic mode over Trump's campaign. And why? Why is that? It has seemed to me, it has appeared to me, that Trump truly is an outsider to all of this. And I wonder how much of it he understands. Or if he's just looking at a lot of it as a common sense businessman, and he truly thinks that the decisions they're making are just terrible decisions. They're just, and of course, many of us who have studied this know that they're making terrible decisions, but they're doing it quite deliberately. They're doing it because they want to completely wreck our American system and set up a completely different Marxist system that's going to ultimately merge our country into a united global system. That's ultimately what they want to do. That's what the New World Order is about. And exactly how they're going to bring it about, I mean, they've tried, you know, they tried one thing with the League of Nations in the early part of the 20th century. That didn't work out. It was dissolved. Then they go with the United Nations. But these elitist groups who have this whole thing in view, they have been at this for many years. You could probably trace it all back to the Parliament of World Religions in Chicago in the late 19th century, because there you had all of these leaders of different world religions. We talk about this in Tares Among the Wheat, and they were trying to amalgamate Christianity with Buddhism, with Taoism and Islam, etc., all these different world religions, and defining them all according to the brotherhood of man and the fatherhood of God, this kind of thing. But it's all aimed at trying to unite the nations of the earth into a one-world system. And that has been the overarching goal of all these different groups for more than 100 years now. And that's why, I mean, part of their plan to blend all the religions is to blend all of the different people together. And what they've got to do, they've got to break up the Bible, they've got to break up Protestant Christianity, because Protestant Christianity, historic Protestantism, is adamant about the gospel in terms of Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life, and no man comes unto the Father but by him. You see, the Jesuits are willing to compromise that message. Historic Protestant evangelicals are not. And that is an obstacle to ecumenism and uniting all of these religions together. But if they can throw all of these different groups of people together through their policies of multiculturalism and so on, and then empower the various pagan religions, Islam in particular, against Christianity while diminishing Christianity in these historically Protestant countries, because that's what they're doing, then they create more of a balance. Now it's become official policy to say we cannot exalt any religion, especially Christianity, above any others. Christianity has to be understood as being equal to all the other religions. It's no more important than any other. And it's effectively a way of enforcing by law the ecumenical agenda. That's effectively what they're doing. And Trump, Donald Trump, as I see it, he really threatens to break up this whole show by going after immigration, by putting a stop to the Islamization of America, etc. He really threatens this establishment, New World Order, one world communist system agenda. He's threatening the whole thing. And it makes me wonder if Donald Trump is a manifestation of Psalm chapter 2. I've talked about this before. Psalm chapter 2, where it says, why did the nations rage and the peoples imagine a vain thing? The kings of the earth have set themselves against the Lord and his Christ. This is the anti-Christian agenda. And it says, he that sits in the heavens shall laugh at them. He shall have them in derision. And could Donald Trump be a manifestation of God's derision against this anti-Christian movement? Is that why Trump has been rocketed to the top of the polls? And is that why he's getting so much attention? And is that why he just seems to be thrashing the establishment, not only the establishment politicians who are either hostile to the gospel or they're compromising in such a way that they violate Christian principles and Christian values, but also the establishment media, the establishment politicians and the establishment media that seem to be working together to oppose Christianity? And is that what's going on with the whole Trump campaign? I continue to wonder about that, brethren. And of course, there is another side to this whole thing. There is a spiritual component to it that I believe we find in the book of Revelation, one that we've talked about before. What I believe is happening is this whole coming together of all these different groups, and with Rome leading the way with the ecumenical movement and trying to unite the world religions. We've watched the popes do this over and over and over again. But what do we find in Revelation chapter 18? In Revelation 18, verse 1, it says, "And after these things, I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, and is become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. For all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. And the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth, etc." And it goes on from there. Okay, but look at what it's telling us. "For all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication." That is spiritual harlotry. Spiritual harlotry. "And Babylon the great has fallen, become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird." Seems very clearly to be making reference to demonic powers and principalities. Think about what Rome and the ecumenical movement are doing. They're trying to unite all of these idols under a single banner. And this, I believe, you know, the Bible tells us that the gods of the nations are demons. Paul says, "I tell you that the sacrifice which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to devils and not to God." He says, "And I would not that you have fellowship with devils or demons." So we're warned about this, Old Testament and New, that behind these pagan gods, behind the pagan idols, are demonic powers and principalities. Well, when you unite them all together into a single system, this, I believe, is the reason why we're told Babylon the Great is become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit. They're all gathered together in Mystery Babylon, Babylon the Great. They're all gathered together into one system eventually. And so, but it, we know that that system is going to be overthrown at some point. It's going to be destroyed. And eventually, as the scripture tells us, the kingdoms of this world will become the kingdom of our God and his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. Praise the Lord. All right, brethren, that is going to do it for us today. That is our show. We'll stop it there. But we will be back next time as the Lord leads us. Until then, God bless you guys. I'm Chris Pinto, and you've been listening to Noise of Thunder Radio.